Welcome to the Global Minnesota Podcast, connecting, informing, and engaging Minnesota with the world. This episode is a recording of a public event held on April 10, 2024, at the Wilder Foundation Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. Ambassador Andriy Sannikov might be most well known for his vocal criticism of Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, but the exiled politician is also an accomplished author, human rights advocate, and negotiator. As a former Deputy Foreign Minister of Belarus, what insights can he provide on the strategic alliance between Belarus and Europe? This recording is a special presentation from Ambassador Sannikov, where he explored the complicated and tight-knit relationship between President Lukashenko and Russian President Vladimir Putin, and what their relationship means for the greater question of security in Eastern Europe and the ongoing war in Ukraine. Here is Strategic Alliances, Belarus and Europe.
So yeah, I come from Belarus, and I remember once I was sitting maybe in the bar after working day in disarmament negotiations with the British gentleman, and well, he was not part of the international crowd, or exactly simple man. He was asking me, Belarus, I don't know the country. Where is? I said, it's between Russia and Poland. He was pausing a little bit, probably remembering some geography, some history. Said, it's not a place for the country to be situated. Well, but it is extremely important. I had a privilege to know a great American of Polish origin, Zbigniew Brzeziński, and Zbigniew Brzeziński's concept was that Ukraine is a cornerstone of security, that if Ukraine is independent and free, Russia will cease to exist as an empire. It will stop the terroristic past and will be going towards democracy. And I was arguing with him because, I agree that Ukraine is cornerstone, but you forget about Belarus, because Belarus is a linchpin. A lot of processes, a lot of both negative and positive were happening in Belarus, which affected the whole region, Europe and the Soviet Union. So I would like to speak about the importance of Belarus, and since the organizers wanted me to speak about special relations with Russia, I will be. And I call this my presentation from Philippe Kostova, because I discovered that probably these names do not tell you anything. But it is very significant names for the history in our region. Because Viskuli is the place where the Soviet Union was denounced in December 1991. And Hostomel is the place which was attacked in the first days of massive invasion of Russia on Ukraine in February 2022, which is where the airport is situated. So I wanted, by this title, I wanted to stress that in a very short historic period, we came from something positive to something very negative. And the positive for us was this kind of event, which happened in Belarus, in the forest of Belarusia, in the place Viskuli, which was the hunting lodge, which was used by the bosses of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. And it was done on the 8th of December, 1991, when Shushkevich invited Yeltsin. Shushkevich, head of state of Belarus, invited Yeltsin, that time president of Russia, and Kravchuk, president of Ukraine, for a meeting. They all had different goals. Shushkevich said to me first, and then to the public, that his goal was to make sure that Russia provides enough gas to Belarus because it was cold winter, difficult time was coming. Kravchuk wanted to get rid of the Soviet Union. Yeltsin wanted to become a Tsar of Russia. So, and but they managed to create the most meaningful moment in history of the 20th century, signing the denunciation of the Soviet Union, the treaty that was signed in 1922, then in this period was denounced. And after that, it was quite a positive period of development in Belarus, because Belarus, and I will be stressing it regularly, is a unique country. Even out of all former Soviet republics, it has a unique history, because all Soviet, I'm not including, of course, Baltic states, because Baltic states are different, sorry, but all other 12 former Soviet republics, they immediately had their president. All the party secretaries became presidents, and they were thinking of themselves as presidents, but being still party secretaries and running for the communist. And Belarus was a parliamentary republic. It was Shushkevich was the head of parliament, and he was head of state. And we managed to survive as a parliamentary republic for 3 years, for 3+ years. And it was really helpful for us to achieve some, progress towards democracy. But unfortunately, then we had the ambitions of our then Prime Minister Vyacheslav Kebich, who we were here, embracing Prime Minister of Russia, Viktor Chernomyrdin, who wanted, all of a sudden, who wanted to become a president. And that is why he was lobbying the constitution, changes in the constitution that will introduce the post of president. He thought that since he's a prime minister, it's inevitable then that he will be elected as president according to the new constitution. And it was Kebich who first introduced the notion of the union state. He was trying to run, since he ruined everything in the economy. There was a stagnation in Belarus, so he was trying to run on the slogan that we'll unite with Russia. And his special thing was, he thought that it would be attractive. He said that, and we will change one Belarusian ruble to one Russian ruble. And Belarusian ruble at that time was maybe 5 times weaker than Russian ruble. So they managed to introduce these changes in constitutions. The constitution was adopted on the 15th of March 1994, and then they announced the presidential election. And that was the candidate that was a wildcat, of course, but he was entrusted by Kebich, our ambitious prime minister, to get rid of Shushkevich. He produced the corruption report that Shushkevich allegedly stole the box of mail. And that was enough to remove Shushkevich from the position of Speaker of the Parliament and open the way to this guy who was extremely popular. He was a populist, and he was not even knowing what to do with the economy, but he was offering simple solutions to people as a populist group. So from that time, our history started to change, because when he became president, and please note that he is taking the oath of allegiance with the proper Belarusian flag, which is white, red, and white. Today, he is arresting people for this flag. He is giving them sentences. The person exposing this flag could receive up to 10 years in prison just for showing the flag publicly. It was adopted by the parliament as well as our coat of arms, but then Lukashenko changed the symbols, making them quasi-Soviet symbols, and now he's trying to claim that These are the state symbols of Belarus, but Belarusians know that our real symbols are. And then he was elected as a president in the only democratically, more or less democratic election in Belarus. After that, we never had any election. So I wouldn't call him a president, and I wouldn't call what he's presenting as a farce to be an election. And then our special relations feel set with Russian stuff. Because Yeltsin was badly ill. He was on the verge of maybe dying because of his heart problems in 1996. And Zhuganov, the communist leader of the Communist Party of Russia, was gaining momentum and gaining a lot of support and votes. And Yeltsin's PR team didn't find anything better than to go into the famous Russian game of gathering land. A lot of the land, first land they wanted to get was Belarus. So they asked Lukashenko to play, to support Yeltsin in this election campaign, presidential campaign in Russia, and Lukashenko eagerly agreed, but he already knew what he will get from it. What he got for this, that he got complete support of Yeltsin, who was re-elected, who his unlawful referendum of November 1996, when he usurped the power, when he destroyed the separation of powers. And after that, when Putin came to power, I want to stress that it was not Putin who insisted on Union State. It was Yeltsin. And they signed, before Putin signed some agreement, they signed three agreements, Lukashenko and Yeltsin. First on the some kind of society of Belarus and Russia, then on Union, then they signed the theater and other basic documents for the Union. So Putin is just the successor of the policy that was started by Yeltsin, who is considered to be a Democrat, maybe, but not for us. Because he was really not very supportive of any democratic changes and processes in Belarus, and he was very supportive of Lukashenko. And then that's how our election is going now. So I think that they give orders not only to vote, not only to orders first of all to the election committees to ensure that there is 100% vote for Lukashenko. And what happened after that, and why I called it, I chosen the title from Biskulin, which actually freed us and we regained our independence, to Hostomel, which is the horrible episode of the war that Russia did from Ukraine. Because it was prepared, the war was prepared on the territory of Belarus, and the whole world was observing. The whole world was watching. It started with the military drill Zapad or West 2009. Medvedev was then placeholder for Putin. And the scenario that was leaked to the press, and then it was confirmed with the real scenario of this drill, was nuclear strike on Warsaw. And breakthrough through the Suwalki gap was Kaliningrad to cut off Baltic states from the rest of Europe. In 2009, these were the plans of Russia. These were the plans of Kremlin. Then it continued to repeat itself up until 2021, when it was so clear that Russia is getting ready to war. We had about 250,000 Russian troops on the territory of Belarus at that time, on the border with Ukraine. So it was so obvious that Russia will attack. It was so obvious that Lukashenko is involved. It was so obvious that the goal will be Kyiv, because that's the shortest way from from the territory of Putin's ally Lukashenko to Belarus to towards capital of Ukraine. So you see, and these are the not all of the units, Russian units that were gathered on the borders of Ukraine on the territory. My view is not my view. I think that Belarus. Why I say that Belarus is a linchpin, because if Belarus was supported in 2020 when we started our revolution, when the whole country rejected Lukashenko, when the whole country was revolting, when the whole country was demonstrating and protesting in the streets, and we didn't have any support, we didn't have any understanding what to do. If we were supported at that time, if Lukashenko was sanctioned, severely sanctioned at that time, there would be no war in Ukraine. I'm sure about that, because look at this. Tell Belarus and Balkan. We need to straighten the line of Europe, which means straighten the line of democracy, which means straighten the line of freedom, the line of freedom. And then there will be no danger in this region, because it is obvious that Putin still has the goal we just discussed when we were going here with Dima and Ola about his real intentions and plan. And I think that he's still having Kiev as his goal. And he is still counting on the territory of Belarus to serve as a springboard to amass a new attack on Kyiv. So I think for the security of the region, for the security of Europe, and for international security, Belarus is extremely important. That is why I recently published a set of articles from my friends from different countries, neighboring countries, which is called Belarusian Net, which you saw in the beginning of our meeting, which claims and actually the top-notch military and foreign experts confirmed that without Belarus, there will be no security. That Europe needs Belarus as bad as Belarus needs Europe and NATO. So that is why my message was mentioned, what the message will be, that stop ignoring the horrible situation in Belarus, because it is horrendous and it is there is no proper attention, because we have about 10,000 political prisoners today in Europe. I never thought that I would even able to pronounce such a figure connected with Belarus, but that is the case today. And people are not kept in prison. People are being killed in prison. Just yesterday, we learned about another killing of a person who was in prison waiting for trial. It is a sixth person of whom we know since 2021 that was killed in prison. And still the world is discussing whether introduce sanctions or not, whether enter into dialogue with Lukashenko or not. No. Another horrible figure is the report is contained in the report of the Freedom House about the state of democracy. For the 18th consecutive year, democracy is diminishing in the world. For the 18th consecutive year, the number of autocratic regimes is growing, and the number of democratic improvements is going down, dramatically going down. So without making conclusions and without taking very resolute measures to deal with the dictators, I think that we will face more and more security threats. So thank you. I'll stop here because I want to deal with it. With Europe, Europe consists of 28 countries and that are members of the European Union, 10 more that are not members of the European Union. If you take Portugal, for example, they don't care. I don't know that they ever mentioned Belarus in their foreign policy statements. If you take Warsaw, Poland, Vilnius, Lithuania, they do care, especially when after Lukashenko started this migrants offensive against their weaponized migration. It is the operation which is definitely a joint operation of Putin and Lukashenko, bringing migrants and throwing them to Poland and the Lithuania, first of all. So they've been too complacent for a very long time. You know, dictatorship is very lucrative. Dictatorship allows you to get very quick and big money without complying with any law. And that was very attractive to the West. It was very attractive for our neighbor. And even today, I mentioned these two countries because they are genuinely really interested in the Russian and trying to support them. And they are known, Lithuanian Poland, and the strongest critics of Lukashenko's regime. At the same time, they have the highest trade turnover with the regime of Lukashenko. So it is not about Europe. It is not about, different attitude towards Lukashenko, towards Belarusian Democrats. It is about the necessity to prevent dictators finally from coming to power. Because I am now member of newly organized World Liberty Congress. I'm one of the members of the Leadership Council. We have 30 dissidents from 53 countries. Nicaragua, Cuba, Venezuela, Iran, China, like Wu Xinjiang and Tibet. And, we compare the practices and they're similar. We compare the behavior of the free world, which is, look, Xi Jinping is coming to visit to France. The foreign minister of France, who was supportive of the revolution of Iranian women against hijab, compulsory hijab, met with the Mullah's regime. So it is hypocrisy, and it is some. I don't know even how to define it. We're trying to now, in this World Liberty Congress, we're trying to nail the patterns which can be and should be attacked and destroyed with the help of free world. Because we are on the verge of depleting our domestic. And it is clear for me, for example, for my friends from Iran, for my friends from Venezuela, from Cuba, that without the help, meaningful help of the world, we will not succeed.
In Belarus, is there the potential of overthrowing the system which has been established, which basically has created the limitation of freedom? Is there a chance for betterment?
I think yes, because it is different, absolutely different regimes. Although Putin was the disciple, Putin was following Lukashenko, his practice of repression, dealing with civil society, dealing with independent press, dealing with opposition leaders. They were following. We discussed it with my good friend, unfortunately killed by Kremlin, by Putin, Boris Nemtsov. It was absolutely clear for both of us that Putin was not only watching, he knew the technologies that were used by Lukashenko to unleash violence against us. So I think that, but at the same time, regime of Lukashenko is centered against one person. One person only takes any decision. And why I say that I would like to think that it will collapse, because it is actually the history teaches us if we have such a regime that it will collapse. There will be no success because Lukashenko thinks of himself as immortal and eternal. He never even thought, he never even allowed himself to think about any success. In Russia, it is different. First of all, it's a big mess. It's a big problem for many years, maybe hundreds of years. Second, it's they have different groups of people and different power centers. Military, special services, oligarch, industry, and they all are involved in this power game. I can agree with you that in Russia it could be worse because they will be defending their assets, all these groups. In Belarus, I think the people are so tired. When I told you about the political prisoners, we have arrests and detentions going and trials going on a daily basis, on a daily basis. Situation is very depressing. It's horrendous. People are living without much hope. But at the same time, it shows that he is not controlling because he needs victims every day to show that he is in control. It is not the real governing of the country. It is just using violence to control the power structures in Belarus to control people. That's it. And I think that the hatred is growing. And moreover, since I said that there is a regular on a daily basis arrest, it is already affects his own people. Because all of them, they have families and family members are being arrested, the family members, their rights being abused. And so I think that's why I think that we have much better chance to get rid of this regime and to proceed with reforms very quickly.
If Putin conquers the Ukraine, what will be the next country to voluntarily give up their possession of nuclear weapons? Hope the world disarmament.
First, thank you for the kind words and the suggestion. Belarus was the first country to give up nuclear weapons voluntarily, together with South Africa. I even produced the press release international that was widely distributed in the United Nations. Two countries who voluntarily, first in the world, announced nuclear weapons and made a statement that they will become non-nuclear members of NPT. This all the discussion about whether Ukraine, if they didn't renounce the weapons, if they didn't give up, I was negotiating all this. It was not possible to retain control for many reasons. It was not possible to even to even to negotiate differently. Because for many reasons, I'll give you one technical reason. The nuclear weapons is a very sensitive stuff. They need maintenance. They need maintenance regularly. And when we were negotiating the succession issue, the maintenance time was running up, especially on Ukrainian ICBMs that were situated in Ukraine. Both on Belarus. So yes, I could theoretically we could have tried to regain some control. First of all, we didn't try because we had only mobile ICBMs, intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear warheads on our territory. Ukrainians had silos. They had much more headache than we because they had this very toxic fuel, missile fuel. And I know from my friends, partners on, during this negotiation, that they tried to break the code. It's a secret, so don't tell it. They tried to break the code. They were really trying. Because the codes were with Kremlin, with Moscow. It was all controlled from Kremlin, so it was not. You had dangerous weapon, which you cannot control and won't be able. So the only way was to try to negotiate with the United States for compensation, for withdrawal of for compensation for nuclear stuff that was contained in uranium, highly uranium that was contained in the nuclear. That's it. So, and we were much more interested in good relations with the Western world, first of all, with the United States, and this disarmament with negotiations and our. How we solve this special issue allowed us to get support and to be regarded as a reliable partner. And that was all done during the period when we were parliamentary. So we managed to use this time effectively. Again, my answer is sanctions. Because sanctions help to free Eastern Europe, sanctions that were introduced against East Germany, against Poland, especially after the military operation, military state in Poland, against Romania, against other European countries. The mistake is to think that sanctions do not work because we didn't have real sanctions. On the edge. Because for the first time, the same economic sanctions, I always have to explain sanctions against people, against officials, as they are called, the target itself, do not work in Belarus. Because it is not the Belarusians who have their money, who have their kids, who go on vacation to Europe, it's Russia. So against Russians, it's effective. Against Belarus KGB person, Lukashenko doesn't allow them to go anywhere. So it is simply not effective. For the first time, they started to introduce sanctions on March when I was in prison. And I was released, and my life probably was saved. I was released together with my friend, Dmitry Bondarenko, manager of my campaign. And then they made a stupid thing. Because they did announce that there will be sanctions against three bagmen of Lukashenko and their companies, which will be followed with sanctions against two more. As my friend from England called them, in Russia there are oligarchs and ones that are billionaires. So two more million guys were to be sent. When they were released, they stopped sanctions. And my friend Nikolai Stankevich and my colleague had to serve the full term of his sentence of 5 years. He's again in prison. A very difficult condition. And what happened after that? The European Union put forward three conditions. Not much. Three. After which, if they're complied with, if they're accepted by Lukashenko, then the sanctions will be lifted. None of them was accepted. Sanctions were lifted. And then the parade of foreign leaders started, including State Secretary of the United States, including some presidents. Lukashenko was invited to Austria. Austrian president and German president came to Belarus. That's what he needed. That's what he needed. He needed to have another proof that the West is weak. The West will never introduce sanctions. The West could be corrupt, bribed, and the attention span is very short. And that's it. is why when I hear that sanctions do not work, we didn't have sanctions, and even when there are attempts, the West got it's very quickly is getting scared of its own attempts and needs sanctions. So I think that really the situation in the world is horrible. It is now clear. I don't know, that was our message from Belarus, that there is no such thing as human rights and democracy per se. It is the, these things are connected with the hard security. If you allow mass abuse of human rights, if you allow destruction of democratic institutions, wait for the war in Europe, like we're having today in Ukraine, and it is not there. So it is not like, okay, just a couple of people in prison and we can tolerate it. No. It is the madman who is, like Dr. Strangelove is planning the revelation. I think that all the sanctions are announced, but as with the announcement of more sanctions, more loopholes emerge. So they have to be closed. One thing. Second thing, what worries me a lot, is that today sanctions against Belarus are tied towards sanctions against Russia, which is connected with the war in Ukraine. Forgetting about the original intention of the West to sanction Lukashenko regime because of the crime against humanity, because of so many abuses, because of so many political prisons, because of killing of innocent people during the peaceful demonstration. But this is somehow not the argument anymore. They are parallel in the sanctions together with Russia, which is not the right thing to do. Lukashenko is serial criminal. He's guilty of crimes against humanity. He is guilty of war crimes, including kidnapping Ukrainian kids from Ukrainian territory to get into Russia. So, any sanctions, and I always say it is morally justified because the condition for sanctions should be not Lukashenko step down, but release all political prisoners. If you release all political prisoners, I will be the first one to say that lift all the sanctions. We have to save people's lives. Okay, are we running out of time? Yeah, sure. Not only me, but my friends, my family. Yeah. It is difficult for me to live in US. I love America, I love Poland, I love many countries to go there. That's why I say it in the film that I regard my exile as a posting. I'm a diplomat. I just have a posting which is becomes a little bit longer than I expected. Thank you very much for your question.
So thanks again to everybody for being here. Huge thanks for joining us and helping to do the work that we're trying to do together here, which is to advance international understanding and engagement across Minnesota. Thank you.